A man died February 13, 2016. Any number of men died that day the world over, but this man was special. Very special. And very special to all Americans. The man was Antonin Gregory Scalia, a justice of the Supreme Court of the United States, and a very special one. For some 30 years, Justice Scalia was perhaps the most influential of the 9 members of the Supreme Court. Scalia was a thought-provoking constitutional scholar. He believed that the Constitution should be interpreted as written and not as judges want or think. Scalia eschewed activist justices who interpreted and even twisted the law and the Constitution to be what they wanted it to be. Scalia, on the other hand, was a bulwark of constitutional fidelity and deep conviction and common sense at the same time. Conservatives everywhere relished the soundness of Scalia's decisions. Justice Scalia believed in what he called constitutional originalism. That is, Scalia would interpret the text, the actual words of the Constitution, examine their tradition, the meaning of those words as put forth by the founding fathers who wrote the Constitution, and act accordingly. That meaning, historically protected, would guide his every decision-making and his judicial writings. Scalia would then follow the history of those protected and sacrosanct constitutional words, beginning with the very first decision-making of the first United States Supreme Court, and carry forward the original intent of the fathers, the implementation of that intent by other right-thinking Supreme Court justices, and apply that constitutional approach, that originalism, to the court decisions of today. Wow, sounds good to me. Scalia railed against what he called evolutionary constitutional jurisprudence, the philosophy of interpretation put forth by liberal or even radical judges and justices. The Constitution, said Scalia, remains firm, intact, as it was, and it needed no updating or evolutionary progression in order to adapt itself to modern times. The Constitution was fixed in time, permanent, and not subject to change or interpretation, and certainly not adjusted or interpreted to suit the times, that is, to suit modern America. The Constitution, Scalia said, had an objective and understandable meaning. Know that, he said, and apply it to every constitutional issue which may arise. Winston Churchill once said, "If you have knowledge, let others light their candles with it." Scalia's deep conviction in constitutional originalism challenged and motivated the very best lawyers and judges America has had in the past 30 years. 30 years the man served. American jurisprudence was profoundly influenced by the lighted candle of Scalia and his decisions, and his writings, and his speeches. And they will live on and motivate the Supreme Court for years to come. A very good thing, in my opinion. Justice Scalia believed strongly that all judges, and especially the Supreme Court justices, should, quote, stay out of politics and social ideology. Stay out. Scalia reasoned that if judges will do that, the law will be more certain and the rule of law will be more secure. So many judges, he thought, came to the bench intent upon applying their own standards of belief, their own philosophies, to become activist judges, which produced the uncertainty and the insecurity of the law and its application. Nothing was worse for the rule of law, said Scalia, than that. Much of what he believed was included in the book he wrote in 2012, Reading Law: The Interpretation of Legal Texts. By the way, that's a terrific book. You might want to get it. In that book, Justice Scalia made clear that the so-called doctrine of a living Constitution means what reformed-minded judges think it should mean, and not what in fact it does mean. Judges took up issues as a matter of law, when in fact so many belong to the people for their decision and for their interpretation of democracy. Activist judges, said Scalia, declared so many issues to be off limits to the democratic process, when in fact, those judges and courts had no legal authority to do so, nor was it, said Scalia, their business to do so. Scalia was a man possessed of great wit. His speeches were always highly entertaining. Often when hearing oral arguments at the Supreme Court, he would erupt with sarcastic and often acerbic wit, which produced much laughter in the court to the chagrin of the attorneys who bore the brunt of his sarcasm. Oh, I couldn't imagine that. Scalia was never above the criticism of his colleagues, especially those liberal colleagues on the court, four of them, so that, again, the decisions made at all levels would be clear to the judicial community, and most especially the people. He thought many times theirs were not. But ironically, perhaps the two best friends Scalia had among his fellow Supreme Court justices were both extremely liberal, namely Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Elena Kagan, ironically both Jewish, and he, Scalia, Roman Catholic. Interesting how those friendships developed. Born in Trenton, New Jersey, and raised in Queens, New York, Justice Scalia attended Georgetown University and Harvard Law School. He practiced law in Cleveland, taught law at the University of Virginia and the University of Chicago, and served in the Richard Nixon and Gerald Ford administrations. President Ronald Reagan appointed him to the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia in 1982. And 4 years later, Reagan elevated Scalia to the Supreme Court. In an unheard-of Senate vote, Antonin Gregory Scalia was confirmed by the United States Senate 98-0. Not one senator opposed his appointment. Justice Antonin Gregory Scalia was influential because he wrote opinions with verve and good sense. And by the way, in prose that any American could read and understand. Even if you're not an attorney, you could read those decisions and understand what they meant. Scalia was, said one legal authority, the best writer the Supreme Court has ever known. He was the court's most withering logician. He was fearless and outspoken, even on that most political of courts. When Scalia arrived at the Supreme Court in 1986, its jurisprudence had become sloppy, results-driven, and plagued with fuzzy so-called three-part tests as a structure for decision-making. But today, the entire court, even the liberal justices, have adopted Justice Scalia's style, and his close attention to text, and his awareness of history and analytical rigor. Scalia constantly chastised the court for taking on legal issues which properly belonged to the people and to the states for their decision. In an opinion he wrote in the case Planned Parenthood v. Casey in 1992, Scalia wrote the following, "The people know that their value judgments are quite as good as those taught in any law school, maybe better." Let me repeat that. Said Scalia, "The people know that their value judgments are quite as good as those taught in any law school, maybe better." He went on to say, "Value judgments should be voted on and not dictated." Not dictated, that is, by the court. Scalia believed in a colorblind constitution. He saw no basis in the Constitution for abortion rights. He defended the presence of religion in the public square. He defended the right to keep and bear arms. He opposed congressional attempts to regulate campaign speech, and he did so with a scintillating wit, often blistering with scorn other lawyers and his fellow colleagues, never deviating from his avowed philosophy of constitutional originalism. Constitutional originalism. Personally, Justice Scalia was an avid hunter. Isn't that interesting? And he was visiting the Cibolo Creek Ranch in Texas during the court's winter break this year, engaging in a hunting trip. He went to bed early Friday night, February 12, telling friends he felt tired. Saturday morning, he never got up for breakfast. When his room was checked, it was found that Antonin Gregory Scalia had died early Saturday morning in his sleep. Justice Scalia was a strong Roman Catholic in faith, and his son Eugene Scalia, a Roman Catholic priest. The son released this written statement the day after his father died on behalf of his family and especially the 9 Scalia children. Said Father Eugene Scalia, quote, "We were blessed to have a father with great wit, warmth, and compassion. We mourn his loss while smiling in remembrance of our time with him. And we are proud of his contribution to the court and the country." At the Roman Catholic funeral mass for Justice Scalia, those in attendance were all of the 8 sitting Supreme Court justices, all of them, and 2 vice presidents, former, a Republican presidential hopeful, Ted Cruz, and several potential high court nominees. Noticeably lacking was President Barack Hussein Obama and First Lady Michelle. Justice Clarence Thomas, Scalia's closest ally on the court, read a New Testament passage from the Book of Romans, and at another time, a eulogy was presented by yet another close friend, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who paid homage and honor to this great man and her friend. Incidentally, even though the mass was held only miles from the White House, Obama never bothered to come and pay his respects, and he was there and he could have. Critics, including Donald Trump, hammered Obama for skipping Saturday's funeral, and Trump tweeted the following. Good old sarcastic Donald Trump. I wonder if President Obama would have attended the funeral of Justice Scalia if it were held in a mosque. Only Trump. A very interesting president we have, is he not, my fellow Americans? Perhaps Obama was more concerned with nominating Scalia's successor, hopefully for him with a liberal judge or candidate, so as to change the balance of the Supreme Court from mildly conservative to liberal in decision-making. The Supreme Court with Scalia was nominally conservative, leaned toward the right, with essentially 4 liberal justices and 4 conservative, with a possible swing vote by Justice Kennedy. With Antonin Gregory Scalia gone, and the nominating and confirmation of a liberal justice, the Supreme Court could well become liberal, organic, activist in decision-making rather than originalist, an avowed objective of Obama and his ilk. Within hours of Justice Scalia's death, Mitch McConnell, leader of the Senate, stated firmly that Scalia's replacement should be chosen by Obama's successor, to be named in November, and not by this sitting president. House Speaker Paul Ryan, although without a vote, agreed and stated that the nomination should wait. Obama, knowing that he has the right to make the nomination even now, will of course proceed, and the Republican-controlled Senate would then determine whether or not to hold a hearing on the nominee, or vote on the qualifications of that nominee, or send the nomination to the full Senate for confirmation or rejection. That nominating and confirming process will be most fascinating to watch, as in some ways, the Scalia successor may be as important to America as the very next president of the United States. Think about that. Antonin Gregory Scalia died at the age of 79. 79. That sounds kind of young to me. The Supreme Court is elderly, however, so they say. Justice Kennedy, Anthony Kennedy, is 79. Justice Stephen Breyer is 77. And Ruth Bader Ginsburg is 82. Wow, 82. The very next president of the United States may nominate perhaps as many as 2 or even 3 more Supreme Court justices in the next 4 years. Talk about change. We will have change, whether it's moderate or radical in the judicial process as a result. Winston Churchill said, I love this quote, I am ready to meet my maker. But whether my maker is prepared for the great ordeal of meeting me is another matter. Isn't that great? There are those who can imagine a divine encounter, the maker with the justice, the maker meeting Antonin Gregory Scalia. Such an encounter could be marked by intellect, humor, wit, humility, sarcasm, and faith from a very special man. Wouldn't you love to hear that? Scalia himself said the following, "I would hope that I would be replaced by someone who would not undo what I've spent almost 30 years standing for." Well, I'll tell you what, Justice Scalia, if President Barack Hussein Obama appoints your successor, an awful lot of what you have done so constitutionally well will, in fact, be undone to the detriment of America. Many feel that Obama will do anything within his presidential power to replace and erase the man Scalia and the incredible constitutional work he has accomplished in the past 30 years. Many of the rest of us hope and pray that that will never happen. Stand up, Republicans. Stand up. Justice Scalia attended Mass done in the traditional Latin version every Sunday at St. John's, the beloved church near his home in McLean, Virginia. Following that Mass, the justice would go to his office in Washington, D.C., read, study, and otherwise prepare for his excellent work. Ironically, as a man of faith, Scalia was never protected by Supreme Court police or by U.S. Marshals, as so many others were. Interestingly, Justice Scalia had his home telephone number listed in the telephone book. Scalia loved music, especially opera, and he often attended. And as he went to church, he expected the church choir to be better than it was. And when it wasn't, he was open in his criticism, again because of his great love for music. Unfortunately, Justice Scalia was an avid smoker. And after Mass, he would gather in the corner of the church cellar for coffee and donuts, for smoking, and for talking with fellow parishioners. Interesting tidbit about the life of this great man. Down to earth, full of common sense, at the same time as one of the wisest men who ever sat on the Supreme Court. He loved Italian food, and that led one of his neighbors and friends to say the following, "May there be a tuxedo-clad waiter in a dark Italian restaurant in heaven serving him white pizza and Chianti." And of course, good music. This man was special. As one of our finest jurists and Supreme Court justices ever, we will miss your leadership, Justice Scalia, and we will miss your great love for our country and we the people. And we can only offer a belated thank you. Thank you for all that you have done. You will always be remembered and treasured. You were true American to the core. We were blessed to know you. And once again, we say with all sincerity, thank you. Thank you.